This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. I'm delighted to have in the studio with me two great political activists, the outgoing and incoming heads of the group Grassroots Leadership. I'm speaking of Cy Conn and Donna Redwing. Cy Conn's a longtime organizer and folk singer. He's got a new book out called Creative Community Organizing, a Guide for Rabble-Rousers, Activists, and Quiet Lovers of Justice. And he's got a new CD out called Courage. Donna Redwing, prior to joining Grassroots Leadership, was National Field Director for Human Rights Campaign and then for GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. She was Policy Director at the Gill Foundation and then Chief of Staff at the Interfaith Alliance, among other things. And she's worked on the Howard Dean Campaign, and I found out last night she even ran for office. Cy Conn and Donna Redwing, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you.
Hey, Matt, it's great to be here.
Oh, it's always great to see you, Cy, and I'm real happy to meet you, Donna.
So. Thank you.
Tell me, Donna Redwing, what is it like to succeed Cy Conn, who's kind of a legend?
Cy is a legend. He's an icon. Years ago, before I met Cy, I bought his books and used them when I trained and mentored organizers and felt that I knew Cy. When I did run for office, Cy Conn called me up out of the blue and said, I'd like to do a fundraiser for you. And that's how we met. And so we really met as friends first. And fast forward many years later, here I am taking over his job. Cy Conn started this organization 30 years ago. And so to fill his shoes is something that I don't think I'll try to do. I think my job is to take this extraordinary organization and really help broaden and deepen the foundation so that we can be around for 30 more years.
Donna, for people who've never heard of Grassroots Leadership, how do you describe the work you do?
Well, we're an organization that works to end social and economic oppression, gain power, and achieve justice and equity. And that's kind of our byline. We're an organization that works with people on the ground. We come into a community and we know that we don't have the answers. We don't have the solutions. They're there already. What we offer are the resources and some of the staff to help people organize, to help them find those solutions. Most of our work is in the South and Southwest, but it often models for folks around the country some of the organizing that they can do.
So you train organizers or do clinics on organizing? Or?
We train organizers. We help with research and data. Mm-hmm. We help with the analysis of that data. We do help organize folks, but again, we never go into a community thinking that we know any more than they do. We really do believe the answers are there. And we just have some of the skills and experience that can spark those answers.
Oh, I love that. I love that Massachusetts accent. My daughter is going to college in Worcester. You grew up in Worcester?
Where is she going?
She goes to Clark University.
That's my graduate school.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
She's having a good experience there.
Oh,
she's a Spanish major and pre-med. She's going to be a junior. So.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
You know, I would add to what Donna said, that we also run aggressive direct action campaigns at the municipal level, the county level, sometimes the state level, sometimes the national level. We are very much organizers. Yeah. Everything that Donna described is a part of how we fight and win. We're a fighting organization. We're a direct action organization. We take on the for-profit private prison corporations. We take on the Department of Homeland Security. We take on ICE. We take on the Shelby County, Tennessee, which is Memphis. So I want folks to see us as a fighting organization. Grassroots Leadership helps people fight for justice. And we focus on for-profit private prisons, jails, and detention centers. We work to abolish them. We focus on immigrant family detention. We have come very close to abolishing that appalling practice. We focus on immigrant detention in general. We're trying to reduce it and to humanize it. And in all of this, We are coalition builders. We are partners. We are allies. We never do anything by ourselves, but we are good at mobilizing other organizations in the fight for justice.
I'm speaking with Cy Khan and Donna Redwing, the outgoing and incoming heads of Grassroots International. And you have this, grassroots leadership, I'm sorry. You have this overarching goal of peace and social justice, and yet you focus on prisons. Why did you focus that way?
Incarcerating people for profit is just wrong. And as we go around the country and talk about that, we realize that a lot of people don't understand that does exist. When a corporation makes its money by virtually buying and selling human beings, by incarcerating human beings, there's something that just terribly wrong. We're not only looking at private or for-profit prisons mm-hmm. and detention centers, but in the last year, we watched the Arizona State Legislature talk not only about looking at privatizing all of their prisons, but about privatizing executions.
And what's wrong with that?
Personally, I think it is about taking something as horrific as execution and giving it to someone else to do for a price. This is when decisions are made about human beings based not on individual rights, not on the Constitution, not on the public good, but when every decision is based on profit. How much can we make by making the cell smaller, the food less expensive, the services less and less? When those decisions are made mm-hmm. based on profit, it's simply wrong. People, the public good is not served. And people are not served.
Mm-hmm. Matt, the last time I was on the show with you, I was talking about the book that my partner and spouse, feminist philosopher, public philosopher Elizabeth Minnick and I wrote together, The Fox in the Henhouse, How Privatization Threatens Democracy. And here's what it comes down to. The multinational corporations, the BPs of the world, have decided that the level of power and control they already have isn't enough. They want it all. They want an end to government. They want an end to regulation. They want to run the show. They want to own the show and us. And we have seen an aggressive assault on the public sector, on the common good, on public services by these corporations. That's called privatization. And what happens is everything is corrupted. So the United States already has the highest rate of incarceration in the entire world. We incarcerate at a rate 6 times that of the closest comparable industrial democracy.
Why is that? Why do we imprison so many people?
Because there's so much money and because it's a racially based system. And you can, the United States for 200 years had a relatively low rate of incarceration. It tracked population. The population doubled, the incarceration rate doubled. It starts right after the Southern Civil Rights Movement, when 6 million African Americans gain the vote, and when African Americans come out from under social and political control that's been imposed on them, that's when the prison population begins to be driven up. We have the so-called war on drugs, which is a war on poor people, a war on poor people and people of color, a war on working people, and our prison population goes up 800% in 30 years. So there's great money in prisons. And the private prison corporations drive that because that's their business. Private prisons are hotels with bars, except the bars don't serve drinks. They're over the windows.
Donna Redwing, you mentioned this imprisoning families, mm-hmm. Immigrant families. And there's a success story. Cy Khan just mentioned that you're a fighting organization over grassroots leadership. You had a great success. You've been on the board of grassroots leadership, right. I see, before you became the head of it here. And the success was over the last couple of years. Tell me about that.
Sure. T. Don Hutto is a facility in Texas that housed families. And I think there were 531 people there. And that included men and women and children. And your listeners should understand that children were brought into this facility fitted for prison uniforms. It took a lawsuit to allow children to have crayons, to allow curtains between open toilets and sleeping facilities. Imagine a child standing there in that prison uniform, getting maybe 3 hours a day of schooling, no recreation, no toys. Imagine a child spending 6 months or a year or 2 years in a prison with their family awaiting trial. Mm-hmm. Some of these people were legal, some were not. But as they waited for their trial, they were housed here. Grassroots leadership spent time on the ground working with the folks in Texas, working with families of families incarcerated, and really fighting this thing. And Cy can probably tell it better, but as I heard the story, Cy and our staff were in Texas thinking about the next 2 or 3 years. You know, what do we do next? We've done direct action. We've done all, you know, of the things that we could do. What can we do next? This will be a 2 or 3 year fight. And while they were having that meeting, one of our Texas staff, he looked at his PDA and saw the news that the Obama administration had not only decided to close Hutto as a family detention center, but had also rescinded RFPs for 3 more family detention centers. It was a stunning and I think quite unexpected early victory.
Well, absolutely. And I think that there's a really important lesson here for all the organizations that are out there, you know, the progressive organizations, the organizations on the left. Grassroots leadership is a very small organization. We've never had more than a dozen full-time staff, volunteers, interns, fellows, associates, but fundamentally a core staff of 6 to 10 to 12 people. And yet we were able to achieve a victory in terms of federal policy. We reversed longstanding policy. The New York Times said, Matt, and I'm paraphrasing slightly, they said that this was like a week after an editorial, and they basically said this was the most important and significant departure in terms of immigration policy by the Obama administration, departing from the policies of the previous Bush administration, which I suspect you still remember. And they are right. They are absolutely right. We got 150 kids and their parents out from behind bars, and we stopped, at least for now, the practice of immigrant family detention. And at that time, there were 7 full-time staff at Grassroots Leadership.
Well, what was the secret of that success with that small number of people working on it?
The absolute secret of the success is to always keep in your vision that it is a movement, that the progressive movement is bigger than any organization, any individual, any issue, any cause. And Grassroots Leadership as an organization has always followed the principle that we work with others on a basis of solidarity and equity. When we work with another organization, we'll say to them, would you like your name first on the report? We'll do the report. Would you like your president to be the spokesperson? We try to model the kind of cooperative movement building that allows us to gather strength, broaden and deepen our capacity to fight. And I think that's really important for movement organizations to understand. Grassroots leadership is what Garrison Keillor might call a pretty good little organization. We are not the most important organization in the world. We are not the most significant organization in the United States. There are hundreds of great organizations, grassroots, advocacy, policy, research, media. And what we need to do is to build cooperation and solidarity and sisterhood among these elements of the movement, because as the song Solidarity Forever says, together we are strong.
May I add to...
Sure, that was Cy Conn of Grassroots Leadership, the former head, and now the new head, Donna Redwing, is going to...
I think there was something extraordinarily compelling about the images and the outreach that we were able to do. 2 films came out of our work at Hutto, and those films told the stories of families, of mothers writing their children's prison number on their wrists. It showed children walking through a prison yard. I think that we were able to humanize the issue of the privatization of detention in prison, and we were able to put a face, a child's face, on that. And even people who had never thought about immigrants and had never thought about for-profit incarceration looked into the faces of these children and could not bear to see them behind bars. So we, I think, were able to humanize this issue in a way that it had never been done before.
So that lesson is, you know, learn how to tell our stories most effectively.
Exactly.
And Donna Redwing's the new head of Grassroots Leadership. You can find out about Grassroots Leadership at grassrootsonline.org. I'm Matt Rothschild.
Actually, it's grassrootsleadership.org.
Is it? Grassroots Leadership.
Well, maybe there's a website I don't know about, Matt, but it's try grassrootsleadership.org.
Well, you would know more than I would. I was just up on the web, and I think I found it that way. But grassrootsleadership.org, which makes more sense anyway. So, Donna, why don't you tell me a little bit about your background and how you got interested in social justice issues?
Many, many years ago, in actually 1964, I was a kid. I was a kid from the projects. I wasn't political. I didn't think I had any power or any possibility. And I peered into a store window and saw a group of very interesting looking people. I wish I could say that, you know, I had an epiphany, but I just thought they were cool and edgy. And they invited me in, and it turned out to be a draft resistors bureau. And I sat and stuffed envelopes for months and listened to people talk about politics and talk about the war and why my friends went to war and other people's friends didn't. And there was one man there. His name was Thurston Taylor. He was a retired librarian, and every day he spent time with me and talked to me. And I think the greatest lesson I learned there, after weeks of stuffing envelopes, I decided I could do better work and bigger work. And he told me that there was no small work in a big movement, and that has been a guiding principle. Over the years, I've, you know, worked on many different issues around justice and equality, and just feel extraordinarily privileged, one, to have almost by accident bumped into somebody who could teach me and mentor me, but also through the years meeting and connecting with people like Cy and others who helped me. I am so privileged to be an activist and an organizer, and I hope that part of my work can be to help other people get into this kind of work.
You know, Donna, I agree with, about that. There's no small work in the justice movement, and yet that can be used as an excuse to justify, especially women, doing the grunt work. I mean, that used to be, you know, the way things ran, and sometimes is the way things still run.
I think everybody needs to do some of the small work. And I think you're right. In the past, women were relegated to making the coffee, stuffing the envelopes. But I think that there are lots of people who think they don't have the time or the resources, and what can I do, and I can't lead the fight. And I have to believe that every one of us has the capacity to make a difference. And sometimes it's that, you know, that young fellow stuffing envelopes, and sometimes it's that woman standing in front of 10,000 people, and everything in between. I think the people that disappoint me the most are those who feel that there's nothing they can give, and so they don't.
Man, I think there's a very broad challenge for all of us in the progressive movement to really systematically redefine what we mean by leadership. Because there are no standards, and I don't mean imposed standards. I mean the things that we values for what it means to lead a political organization. And I think that's really critical. I mean, at Grassroots Leadership, we have a certain level of work ethic. No one has an executive assistant. No one has a secretary. You do your own typing. You do your own mailing. Now, some people will argue, when I was the executive director, some people say, Cy, it's not a good use of your time to go to the post office.
And how do you answer that?
Well, I answer, I need to have my hands on the work and to feel a sense of accomplishment. Secondly, I would say, I don't go to the post office any more often than anybody else. I'm not the postal person. And third, I would say, you know, if you're providing leadership to an organization, you actually want people not necessarily to follow, but to pay serious attention to your vision, to your sense of strategy, to your sense of mission. And they need to respect you by seeing you as a capable worker. I learned this when I was an organizer for the Textile Workers Union back in the 1970s. And what I was taught by more experienced organizers is the leader you want is the best worker in that department. Not necessarily the person who's the best talker, not necessarily the person who's the most political, but the person who is most respected for the work that they do. And I know as a lead organizer, as a supervisor of organizers, as an executive director, they need to see me do the work that they do so that they respect my understanding of what they do, and therefore we can have a conversation. No. But I want to argue that we need to fundamentally transform the nature of the leadership of progressive organizations along feminist principles, along democratic principles. And we really need to say that there is no small work in a big movement is not a rationalization to say to people, you're not doing small work, but to say, no, we should. There is some level of equitableness in the division of labor.
And I think there's also, I mean, to sit with our staff and stuff envelopes or to, we just moved into a new office, to lug furniture with our staff, it builds relationship and it builds a kind of camaraderie. And I also learn so much. I learn by sitting with and working with our organizers in ways that I couldn't in simply a staff meeting or a personnel meeting. In that small work, we learn great big lessons.
Now, you two have been involved in this process of talking about leadership. Si, you're retired now, and Donna Redwing, you're coming on board. You have come on board for grassroots leadership, but you had a very conscious, deliberate effort to transition here, and I'm wondering what lessons you have to offer on that.
First, Ben, I think that every movement organization that we have is a critical part of the possibility for change, right? I mean, the Progressive, which just celebrated its 100th anniversary, is a very, very important element of the progressive infrastructure. You know, we need the Progressive. Grassroots leadership only charts 30 years, but we have a track record of significant victories. We need grassroots leadership. So it's really important to maintain and sustain the organizations that make progressive change possible, which means we have to pay particular attention to the moments of vulnerability in the life of the organization. One of those moments is always when there's a change of leadership, particularly true when you have somebody who is a founding executive director who's been in a place for 30 years, as I have been. So I gave 4.5 years notice to the board and staff. You pointed out that that's longer than a lot of nonprofit executive directors last, right?
It's almost as long as Jay Leno.
Oh, that was good. And we started 4.5 years ago a deliberate process. We established a board staff task force that I was not a part of. I refused to be a part of it. I said, this is no longer my organization in any sense. It is, of course. I'm loyal to it. I'm faithful to it. I'm a volunteer. But it's important that the people who will carry the movement forward, who will carry the organization forward, they have to be in a decision-making position. We worked with an outside transition consultant. We went through not just what does the new executive director look like, but how do roles shift? How do we strengthen the organization? How do we reorganize internally? How do we expand our funding base before the executive director gets there? So I think that was the first lesson is very long preparation, understanding how many second directors are going to fail simply because in many cases the people who contribute money, the foundation, say, well, we want to take a wait-and-see attitude, which is, of course, a self-fulfilling prophecy. We say, well, we don't want to give any money now. We'll see how the new executive director does. In 2 years, we'll consider it. Well, guess how the new executive director will do. So that was the first. The second is that Donna and I have been on a national Standing for Justice tour since February 1st when she became executive director. And we are going, and we'll continue through the end of this year, maybe longer. We are going everywhere that grassroots leadership has, organizing projects, staff members, board members, political allies, media allies, foundation supporters, individual donors. We're doing fundraising events. We're doing media, as you graciously are doing now with us. We're getting the word out. We're letting people get to know Donna through house parties like the one we had last night with the Wisconsin Apprentice Organizers Project. We are doing a very deliberate and I hope thoughtful transition process. By the end of the National Standing for Justice Tour, Donna will have met some 500 to 600 people, virtually everybody who is important to grassroots leadership, and they will have met her.
That's Cy Kahn, who's just left the head of grassroots leadership, talking about Donna Redwing, who's also here with us. Donna, a little more about you. You were once called the most dangerous woman in America by the Christian Coalition. How'd you deserve such an honor?
I'm not really sure. I was actually in a meeting with a group of bishops and pastors and some high-level clerics, and they pulled out the and they had a smug look on their face, and I wondered what was going on, and they pulled out the Des Moines Register, and there was an article about Howard Dean's staff, and the Christian Coalition said, and you know, working with the gay and lesbian community, they have Donna Redwing. We believe that she's the most dangerous woman in America. So that's what's going on my tombstone many, many years from now. I did ask around, though, because, you know, I knew I was effective, but I didn't know I was that effective. And I spoke to one of the reporters at the Des Moines Register, and he said, when he talked to them, one of the people he spoke to said, they thought I was so dangerous because they really liked me, and they thought I had integrity, and they were someone that, they said that I was someone it was hard to dislike. And so they thought that was much more dangerous than someone that they could actively dislike. So I thought that was pretty nice, actually.
Hard to dislike means hard to dismiss, I guess.
Yes.
Oh, that was good.
No.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, but she's so nice. And she's so funny and she's so warm. That's good. That's good.
Nice, funny, and warm. We need more of that. Cy, we just have a couple minutes left, and I wanted just to give a plug for your book, Creative Community Organizing, A Guide for Rabble-Rousers, Activists, and Quiet Lovers of Justice. I do like the quiet in there. Why'd you put that there?
That was because I didn't write the title. I sent out an email to my 5,000 closest friends saying, help me name my book. The wonderful folk singer and jewelry maker Mara Levine and her mother came up with Creative Community Organizing. The great blues musician Scott Ainsley came up with the first half of the subtitle, A Guide for Rabble-Rousers and Activists, and I showed it to my, you know, beloved partner and spouse, Elizabeth Minnick, and she said, it's wonderful, but what about us quiet lovers of justice?
It's sweet, isn't it?
Very.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. I wanted to thank you both
for
being
man.
On Progressive Radio today, Donna Redwing and Cy Kahn, the two leaders, one incoming, one outgoing, of grassroots leadership, which does incredible work around the country, especially in the South and Southwest, about our prison system, trying to bring justice to our justice system and the prison system. You can contact Grassroots Leadership at grassrootleadership.org.
Eponymously.
Thank you.
Quite well.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.